Welcome to Another Day Above Ground, a show for, by, and about baby boomers. It's the podcast for people who have no idea how to download a podcast. And now, here's your host, Dale Irvin.
Well, thank you, Farad, and welcome my fellow boomers to Another Day Above Ground. This is the podcast made just for you because, hey, we are another day above ground. And I can't do this podcast alone. I have two partners that help me out. First of all, from the great state of Indiana, the Aristotle of comedy, Mr. Tim Slagle.
Hey, and apparently President Trump is now admitting that White House staffers have been infected by the coronavirus, but he insists that it's the best COVID ever. It's actually COVID-20.
COVID. And joining us from the mile-high city of Denver, Colorado, it's Carolyn Strauss.
Yeah, we're still dealing with this COVID-19, but I think we have two pandemics, COVID-19 and stupid-19, and I can't tell which is worse.
And murder wasps. You know, they're called murder wasps.
Murder hornets.
Murder hornets, yeah. That's what. I finally dawned on me when this whole COVID thing, people were running to the gun store. Now I know why. To shoot the murder hornets, because they're like the size of a sparrow, and you gotta bring them down. I don't know. The whole thing is just it's slowly creeping into the surreal world, Twilight Zone world. When can I touch my?
Here's the thing that I'm finding really odd. Whenever I watch something on television and I see a huge gathering of people on television, something that was shot a couple of months ago, and don't you see them and you go, oh, they're not socially distancing. Nobody's wearing a mask. This is terrible. And it was only like 2 or 3 months ago that these things were happening.
Well, I don't think, oh, this is terrible. I think, how do I get there?
Yes.
I even pointed out watching old movies, going, those people are way too close.
Yeah, the fact that we're so trained in just a 10-week period to be this hypersensitive to everything. I mean, I have actually seen people come out of the grocery store before they put their bags in the car, they're spraying them with Lysol.
Oh, yeah.
Before they put them in the car because they don't want the bags from the grocery store to touch the seat of the car.
The funniest thing for me is to watch people driving with masks on.
Yes.
Yeah.
You're alone in your car and you're driving with a mask on.
But you got a sack full of groceries that's covered with the coronavirus. Actually, the coronavirus can live on paper, on cardboard. It can live on your clothing for like 3 days. It can live on smooth surfaces for like up to 9 days. So yeah.
I'm gonna start charging it rent.
So that's why people are wiping it down. But man, yeah, I miss being able to go out and, run naked around the yard. Well, I guess I could still do that, but,
But now all the neighbors are home and they can see you.
That's the problem.
That was a slip of the tongue. It's not what I meant. But, but we lost three important people in the world this week. Roy Horn, who was the Horn side of Siegfried and Roy. He died. He was mauled by a tiger, you remember, several years ago, and he recovered from that. And then he just died.
Did he ever recover from that?
He was really damaged.
Yeah,
really, like one of his side of his body didn't work, so he had a hard time walking, and he had a hard time performing, and his face was totally mauled. So the plastic surgery left him not looking like himself.
Well, they both had a hard time performing after that. The owners of the Mirage were, wait, you mean those tigers weren't behind like a cage? You mean they could have gone out into the, they could have caught the audience if they wanted to. It's like, okay, closed.
We lost him. Then we lost Little Richard, who was, in his 80s, I believe, and he passed on. And then just today, Jerry Stiller, who 90, I don't know if any of them were boomers or older than boomers, but three funny people. Well, Roy wasn't that funny, three entertaining people who, you know, who are gone now.
So, yep. Little Richard and the original Tiger King.
Oh, wouldn't you love to see Siegfried come back with Joe Exotic? Siegfried and Joe.
Here's something interesting about Little Richard, because I started doing some Googling. Originally, Tutti Frutti was an extremely vulgar song.
Yes.
Were you aware of that,
yes,
Carolyn?
Yes, I was, yeah.
I was not.
Yeah, the original words were Tutti Frutti, good booty.
Oh, I thought it was a song about gum.
Uh-huh. Kinda. And the words the words go down from that. I'm gonna have to. You can Google them yourself, or because we can't say them on the air.
Wow!
I know Carolyn's probably gonna be dying to hear what they were, but
I'm gonna look them up.
And what was the other song that was almost banned for bad lyrics back in the 70s?
There was Louie Louie.
And
that was just because they were mumbling. It's apparently there was nothing bad in that.
They thought they were speaking witchcraft.
Yeah. Well, here's the other thing. Okay, I'm gonna read the lyrics of a song that I think was also a Little Richard song, and I can't believe that it was not banned. Okay.
All right.
Good golly, Miss Molly, you sure like to ball. When you're rocking and a rolling, can't hear your mother call. Now, how is that not banned?
They used to get away with a lot of stuff, you know, more so than now. Yeah. Oh, boy. Well, we've got a great guest. You know, we've been talking the last couple of weeks with our friends down in Mexico to see how they like retiring down there. And we started chatting amongst ourselves going, you know, that's a feasible option right now. But exactly how do you do it? So we found a guy that knows exactly how to do it, wrote an entire book about it, and I'd like to welcome him to Another Day Above Ground, Mr. Travis Luther.
Hey, thanks for having me. Really thrilled to be here.
You wrote this book, The Fun Side of the Wall, which, you know, the wall's not finished yet.
That's looking ahead. That's what's called looking ahead.
I thought The Fun Side of the Wall was the top.
I always thought it was the little hole about 3 feet up.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, wait, no, I didn't mean it that way.
We strive for a family rating. And anyhow, the other side of the wall, and this is a book you wrote that I've been reading on the Kindle, and this is an outcropping of a thesis that you did in college?
Yeah, 2008, my master's thesis. I'm an entrepreneur. I have been for 25 years. And, you know, in 2007, 2008, I'll just clarify, you said I was a lawyer. I'm not actually a lawyer. My wife is the lawyer in the family, but Lawfather is a legal technology company that serves lawyers. And so we grew very quickly, being one of the few that did that. And so, you know, I started reaching out to other entrepreneurs all over the world, really based on this book I'd read by Thomas Friedman called The World is Flat. And what I found was that entrepreneurs from the United States were traveling all over the country and really embracing this, digital nomad lifestyle. So I might be working with a web developer from Philadelphia who happened to be living in the Philippines, or I might be working with a web developer from Los Angeles who happened to be, you know, living in some remote Java island or something like that. And I just got really interested in this idea that people were leaving the United States on purpose. You know, I had grown up in a very small town in rural Washington State, right on the Washington-Idaho border. And I will admit, I had a very narrow view of the world. I didn't really consider exploring it much. I thought the world outside of the United States was largely stupid and dangerous. And I just hadn't put much thought into it. As my businesses grew and I continued to have these international relationships, I really started to question for myself, does America offer the best of everything? And are these people who are leaving the United States crazy? And what would make someone want to leave the United States? What is it that we don't have here that leaves them in some way unfulfilled. And so that was kind of the genesis of the thesis project. As I said in that introduction, when you're in graduate school, you don't get to ask these big, huge, important questions. You have to really nail it down to something very small so that you can graduate on time. And so given its proximity to the United States, I found this small little, well, not small, but this enclave of baby boomers in Mexico, just south of Guadalajara, and decided to ask them, why the hell did you leave the United States? You know, what was it about the U.S. that you couldn't stand anymore? And so I went down there and took a couple trips and interviewed them. And that was my thesis. But, you know, every year I would talk to people about that research and they would just ask me questions as if I was the expert. Well, where else are they? And what other reasons do they leave for? And what does it cost? And so over the last couple of years, I decided I was going to pull that thesis out, dust it off, update the research and do a whole new round of surveys and travel to really try and answer this question for all of the baby boomers in Mexico all over the place.
So, you're talking to three baby boomers here and thousands more online. And, what do we do? What should we look for? What's the first steps if we're thinking, maybe we should leave the country because, you know, it's getting kind of snarky.
Well, that's what a lot of folks down there that I interviewed said. I think you have to have a real sense of what it is that you want as a baby boomer, as an expatriate, period. You know what I mean? I appreciate the United States a lot more now, having traveled it the world for 15 years and seen a lot of places. I definitely appreciate what's special about this place, but I also understand where there are holes and where people feel like, especially with the case of baby boomers, that they're really not connected to popular culture anymore. You know, a lot of the people that I surveyed said that they don't feel like magazines are geared towards them. They don't see people who look like them in advertising. You know, they feel troubled when they're out there looking for an employment, and it seems to take them a lot longer to find it when they do.
Exactly. You know, we think that TikTok is a sound that a clock makes, not some, Chinese website. You know, yeah, we're a little behind in the technology area.
We came from the age of fax machines and dial-up modems, and in most of the third world, that's what they're still using.
Yeah. Instagram is oatmeal that somebody sends me.
That's right. So I guess the answer to your question is, you have to have good reason to leave the United States. And what I thought I would find, in 2008 was that low income baby boomers who were really struggling with money and didn't feel like they were going to have a nice retirement would be the ones who were going down and retiring in Mexico because they had to. And what I found was almost the opposite. I found that a person who's most likely to retire in Mexico is actually a rather affluent, Caucasian, well-educated person who does not have money trouble per se, but tends to worry about money more than other people, and who have found a way to actually lengthen their retirement on average by 5 years by taking advantage of the cost benefit of moving to Mexico. So, but once they get there, what they discover are these authentic communities that they feel that they're a part of. There's a Mexican culture there that respects their elders. And they've just really connected with something that I say is different than what we've developed here in the U.S., which is really a commodified retirement. You know, there's this idea that you hit a certain age, you go to a Soviet-style block home, you have your day dictated to you, your meals dictated to you, and hopefully you die in your sleep and someone cashes in that retirement insurance. And that's
pretty much every house right now during this lockdown.
But that's not what these folks wanted, and I think they were motivated by finance in some extent to go explore Mexico. But once they got down there, they found this culture and this community of both Mexicans and existing expats that really fulfilled something in them that was this desire to have authentic connections and an authentic community.
Do you find that most people keep one foot, so to speak, in the United States when they go do that? Or do they sell everything and just move to Mexico? How's it work?
It's changed in the 12 years, 13 years almost since I started this project. When I first went down there, the most likely what you would find is someone who had a family member who had already moved down there, or a friend or a relative. And so they would come down and, like you said, they'd kind of put one foot in, hang out for a couple months, maybe just come down for the winter or something along those lines. It'd be very unusual to find anybody who just said, I'm selling everything and I'm moving to Mexico. You fast forward to the last couple of years, and that's almost exclusively what you find. I think it's because, you know, the strength of the content on the internet, the strength of the internet in Mexico, people's ability to communicate and connect online has made it where I found way more people who said, I hadn't even taken a trip. I hadn't even gone to San Miguel. I hadn't even gone to Lake Chapala. I just joined these chat rooms or subscribed to these expat magazines or formed these relationships online. And just exactly as you said, Carol, they just sold everything and showed up in Mexico. And to be honest, I didn't get to interview a lot of people who went down there and weren't successful, but the people who made that step, that sold everything and just kind of trusted their gut, didn't regret the decision.
Now, do they just say, are they just tired of their kids by that point and saying, hell, we don't really need to see them anymore. They're on their own. If they got grandkids, we can FaceTime. Bye-bye. You know, is that really it?
No, I don't think that they're looking to leave their families or anything. You know, these aren't the days of running to Mexico because you're in legal or IRS trouble, you know. That's Belize. That's still largely Belize. it's funny because you have this older generation who's telling me over and over again, my young, hip, you know, liberal kids think I'm crazy. But here they are down in Mexico having like a great time. And of course, their kids are worried about their safety, which is the question that everyone always asks me. Well, aren't you going to get killed, beheaded, and all of these other things in Mexico? And you know, the answer is largely no. I mean, I ran data comparing people's likelihood of being shot on the street by accident in Chicago or Washington, D.C. versus Mexico. And if you're a U.S. citizen, you're way more likely to be shot in any of our major metropolitan cities. That's not to say that there isn't a great deal of crime and violence in Mexico. There certainly is. In fact, this year, I think their murder rate has been the highest it's been in 10 or 15 years, unfortunately. But that violence rarely, rarely ever touches on any of the expat communities. It's generally limited to people in the drug government or police trade. And when it does happen, which is unfortunate, but we generally hear about it every single time because it is in fact so rare that we will hear about every single American killed in Mexico, even though you're 10, 15 times more likely to die in a car accident or a scooter accident down there or falling off a cruise ship than you are to be murdered or caught in the middle of drug violence. So,
Travis, have you bought your property? Did you buy your property yet? Are you holding on to it?
I'm in a negotiation with the wife here.
falling off a cruise ship. The reason why that, you can prevent that just by not talking back to your wife.
That's true.
Yep. Now, if we were going down there and we wanted to get, you know, a job, just to, you know, get out of the house for a while, are the cartels hiring? Do you know? Would that be a good way to go?
I think at the rate they're burning through people, you've probably got a shot. I don't know exactly what you have to do.
It's going to be a postal cartel. God, the cartels are the ones that are going to be delivering the mail here soon.
Yeah.
But to go back to Dale's point, what if you do want, some people when they're retired still want to have a part-time job just to keep busy, to see people. Is there any options available for that? Or
there are. I mean, you can't go down there on a long-term tourist visa, or I've been told that largely you can pop into Mexico anytime you want and really stay as long as you want. There's not a lot of enforcement on that, but as far as working, unless you get some sort of residency, you're not going to be able to work. So what a lot of folks do is they have some kind of online business. So I talked to a woman who was an insurance adjuster, and she largely did that over the phone anyway. So she continues to work from Mexico doing that. Other people who have any kind of online business or consulting business still do that. But to get employment in Mexico, which is important for sometimes for capturing some of those health benefits that or medical benefits that I talk about in the book, although you don't have to work to get them, you do have to get some kind of residency. And so you have two options. You got a temporary residency. And then you have a full-time residency. And I think with either of those, you can work. And they're actually really easy to get, especially compared to other countries where folks go. You can become a full-time permanent resident of Mexico in as little as 4 months.
Wow.
In other places, you have to go live, you know, you have to go live there for sometimes 4 years before you can.
So you can't come back and see your kids.
No, you can come back. It's different. Citizenship and residency are different. So you're not giving up. You're not denouncing any, your citizenship or anything like that, and the government is still going to collect taxes on any benefits they send you, even though you're spending them or using them in Mexico. But they're different, yeah. And residency is a lot easier. And so a lot of folks that I know down there, going back to the "Have I bought my property?" question, they go down there and they sell real estate to other baby boomers that are coming down, and they're pretty successful doing that.
Huh. So it's an extended tourist visa. That's what you said. Is that what most expats do to retire in Mexico? They just get an extended an unlimited tourist visa.
Yeah, or they don't. They just go down. I mean, there's this irony in the fact that we sit up here complaining about all of these Mexicans sneaking in here, and I'll be damned if there aren't more of them sneaking down there. You know, I mean, that's kind of the irony of this whole situation. Now, I have checked in on some folks over COVID, and that's really created a problem, because if you're down there illegally, you know, or I mean, it's not as bad as it sounds, but there are some folks who, you know, temporary housing and Airbnbs and all of the things that they have relied on to live have ceased to operate. And so they're kind of couch surfing, which is questionable to the host if you're trying to control COVID. And so there are some people down there who can't come back because of the travel restrictions, don't want to go through the border because they don't want to deal with the fact that they've been in Mexico illegally and may suffer some consequence of that. And they're in no man's land.
Huh.
What do you mean they don't want to go through? Don't you have to go through the border to get back in, or do they just go north until they find a tunnel?
Well, because of the way that they're checking everybody and possible quarantines for people traveling and whatnot, the likelihood, if you're in Mexico illegally and you try and come back to the United States, the likelihood that you might actually suffer a real consequence for that is greater now, because you're actually going to get stopped. You're going to go through an exit interview about the possible quarantine. Whereas before this, it was a pretty porous border for U.S. citizens coming back and forth.
So staying in Mexico illegally, meaning you were breaking Mexican law or U.S. law?
Yeah, Mexican law.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. But you don't go through Mexican customs when you leave, do you?
I don't want to say, because I'm not really sure. I'm not really sure how the process back into the United States works.
Uh-huh.
All I've been made aware of is that doing that now without having the proper travel documents will put that in your record. And so the likelihood of being able to become a resident of Mexico could be diminished because you've been caught breaking the law there.
Got it.
About as general as I'll make.
It would be much better than to just hitchhike a ride on a vegetable truck and hide under the watermelons.
Yeah, or just stay in Mexico until.
No, either way.
Yeah.
What should we look for? What's going to be different when a boomer goes down? I mean, other than, you know, the stores and all the things that we're used to here, what's the major shock that boomers are finding when they move to Mexico?
Well,
good or bad.
Yeah, all the things that you think people would complain about, you know, the crime and the danger and all these things that we talk about here, the thing that they complain the most about is the slower pace of life, not for themselves personally, but when it comes to fixing a refrigerator or having someone mow the lawn or something like that, you know.
Yep.
I've heard 100 times that mañana does not mean tomorrow in Mexico. It may in Spanish. Here it may mean tomorrow, but mañana never means mañana. So there's kind of this more loose acceptance of time than we have here. And so I think that's probably the biggest irritant for most folks down there. But I think, you know, the shocks are not even for baby boomers, even just for me. You know, the cost to go to a restaurant, have a nice meal is so much lower than you can even imagine. You know, the cost for rents are so much lower. I think the sophistication of the public transportation in the cities and the towns is on par with what we have here. I mean, when I first went to Mexico, as I said, kind of in that introduction, you know, this was at a time when everyone was complaining that people were sneaking into the country and Mexico was so dangerous. And I thought, as soon as I get off this plane, I'm going to be surrounded by children who want me to take them back to Mexico, and I'm going to have cops pointing machine guns at me telling me to go home or something. And it just wasn't like that. It was just such a normal, my first city was Guadalajara, so it was such a normal, sophisticated, metropolitan experience. And I think to me, that was what was most shocking, was like how European it felt, how safe it felt, how normal it felt, you know. And as I kind of say in the book, though, you know, the real challenge is, especially as you get more inland and you get away from Cancun and Puerto Vallarta and places like that, is that you do have to start to learn to speak some Spanish, and you do have to start to navigate some things for yourself. And I think a lot of those folks down there, as I say, they have a real grit about them, a real sense of adventure. And so this is all kind of part of what they love about taking this plunge and moving into a new country, is this chance to explore another language and other cultures and really, really embrace it and mesh themselves with it. So I think you have to have a willingness to do that, you know, and not be embarrassed. I think you get over messing up a few dinner orders and getting orange juice instead of milk or whatever, and you get over that initial embarrassment, and then it just becomes a fun, cool challenge. And I think that the people in Mexico see you trying, and they really respect that. I never heard anybody, which I've heard in the United States a ton, unfortunately, tell me to speak Spanish. You know what I mean? Like, I've just never faced any kind of hostility trying to stumble through words and phrases. I've always just felt a real graciousness to let me try and connect and let me, mm-hmm. you know, try to be part of the scene.
Well, I think most baby boomers also believe that you can make someone understand you if they don't speak English by talking louder and with an accent.
That's right.
Where is the restauranto?
That's right.
And let's see, one last thing. And what is, what's the one thing that you would say that, you know, we should make sure we take with us that you can't get down there?
Soft toilet paper.
Black licorice.
Which you can't get here now either. So, so I'm good.
I would say an open mind. You know, I mean, that's it. You know, my wife would say cockroach spray, but
I love your wife.
And be prepared to be just amazed. I mean, it is just such a cool place. It really is.
Cool. Well, we really thank you for being here, Travis. And your book, the Fun Side of the Wall. Is that right?
That's right. Yep.
I got that right. And that's available on Amazon and bookstores and everywhere else. Or did you sell it through your website too? Or
Barnes and Noble and online and Amazon online are about the only places you can get it at the moment.
Oh, okay. Cool.
Maybe once those bookstores open back up, you can go.
Oh, yeah. Valid point there. Yeah. And if people wanted to reach you to find out more about retiring to Mexico, would you like to give us a contact?
Yeah, you can find me at my website, travisluther.com. And then we've put up a website specific to the book and some content in the book at mightybuffalo.com.
Mightybuffalo.com. Okay. That sounds like a Native American name, but.
Well, it's where the buffalo roam. The original title of the book was going to be Where the Buffalo Roam, Baby Boomer Expats in Mexico. And then one guy I was interviewing said, made a comment about, oh, we're fine. We're on the fun side of the wall. And I thought, that's too.
Yes, yeah. There you go. There you go. But Travis, thanks so much for joining us. We really appreciate you having there. And I hope everybody goes out and buys The Fun Side of the Wall, because it's a good book from what I have read, with a lot of good information. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks a lot, guys. Travis.
Bye.
Well, that about wraps it up for another week. I've got the time right now. I'm going to learn Spanish. Because, you know, why not? I'll be able to eavesdrop on people at, you know, at Kmart. And, but yeah, I'm going to learn Spanish, I think, and start saving my pesos. You never know. But we hope you got some good information out of this week's show, because it's time for us to go. Carolyn, do you have any final words for the kids?
No tengo nada. Gracias por preguntarme. ¿Eh?
Look at this. She already learned.
I lived in Spain when I was in college, man. I'm a quick study. Yeah, my Spanish is pretty good. So we can all go together and get a house together and bring your families. And that'll give me people to hang out with, because I'm so sick of being alone. So we'll go there and it'll be fun.
Okay. Carolyn will be our minister of language. Yes. Tim is going to be our minister of defense. Tim, any last messages?
Visit Usted Mi Websito.
And I can say estoy embarazado, which sounds like I'm embarrassed. It actually means I'm pregnant. I'm not.
So. Which is often interchangeable.
So visit, let me translate this. Visit Tim's website. TimSlagle.com. That's what he said. And visit mine too, DaleIrvin.com. You can sign up for the Friday Funnies and get the news reported to you live at your desk in a very funny way. And, of course, visit our website, AnotherDayAboveGround.com. Go on there. Leave us a message. If you'd like to be on the show, let us know, and we'll see if we can fit you in. Because if you've got something of interest to baby boomers, we want to know. Baby boomers are why we're here, and we're here because it is Another Day Above Ground.
And that's it for Another Day Above Ground. For Dale, Tim, and Carolyn, I'm Farad Muhammad. Thanks for listening.